I'm Ajora Carter. Welcome back to The Promised Land. We're talking about all kinds of interesting jobs and the paths that lead people to them. Mike Fantasia is one of the top location managers in Hollywood. He's worked all over the world on some of the most memorable films of our times: Seabiscuit, Memoirs of a Geisha, Free Willy, Jerry Maguire, and... Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. He started out with a degree in environmental science. He worked for more than a decade with the U.S. Forest Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But then he was bitten by the film bug. Steven Spielberg says Mike Fantasia is the best in the business.
The legend says that a crystal skull was stolen from Akator in the 15th or 16th century.
Drop the guns! Or Colonel Dr. Spalko is dead.
Now, 20 years later, Mike's working for Sony Pictures on his next big project, The Green Hornet, one of my favorite comic book superheroes, to be released next summer. Now listen up. Mike is about to give us a private, behind-the-scenes tour of some of the construction that's already underway for The Green Hornet. You'll see, he's still an environmentalist at heart.
Hi, Majora. Mike Fantasia here. I'm going to take a little walking tour of our soundstage 15 on the Sony lot. This is where they built the Yellow Brick Road and that whole huge set on The Wizard of Oz about 70 years ago. We have our construction department, our paint department, plasterers. We have our grips setting the trusses up above the stage. When we're done with the set, all the wood will be taken apart. That which can be salvaged will be salvaged. That which can't be salvaged will be recycled. It'll be put in a green bin. It'll be taken away by the vendor. They will generally chip it, remove all the metal, and that will then be the raw material for other products, plywood, MDF board, things like that. When we're painting, we always have the paint department sort of in one area whenever we can. We have evac fans that we suck in air from outside. We have vents in the roof. If they're using materials that are overly toxic, if you will, they'll go outside or to a separate shop. So we try to use soy-based inks when we can, double side when we can, not even sandpaper if you don't have to. These are flats that I was talking about earlier. Looks like an apartment door. There's a huge warehouse here full. Every studio's got warehouses full of flats like that that are marked, they're identified, there's plans that go with them. Many studios have relationships with Habitat for Humanity and other entities like that, so that anything that can be used in housing construction is used. All the studios have really gotten so much better to reduce, reuse, recycle.
Mike Fantasia now joins us from the studios of National Public Radio in Culver City, California, just a few miles from that Sony soundstage. Mike, Forest Service location manager. It doesn't seem like such an obvious, you know, kind of thing to go from environmentalist, basically, you know, into location managing. What was it about the film bug that really bit you?
It's such an interesting business. Every 6 months to a year when you work in films, there's a new project. You meet new people. You go to new places. As a location manager, for every location we see in a movie, we might look at 10, 15, 20 different locations. So we see huge diversity, huge number of locations, searching for property. I did that as a land appraiser. I do that as a location manager, taking photographs, using maps, working through the environmental process. I worked on dozens of environmental assessments when I was with the Forest Service. I coordinate now with a lot of the people that I used to work with, if you will. I work with biologists, geologists, hydrologists on different projects. So there's a lot of similarities. And so
on film projects, you've had to work with those kind of science types.
On Free Willy 2, about 15 years ago, we were creating fire in the San Juan Islands on the ocean. So we had to find a way to create fire without increasing the water temperature so that we wouldn't fry all the little plankton in the top six inches of the water. So our special effects guys, working with the state, working with the federal government, devised a way to put the fire just above the water.
Wow.
Whenever we work on national forest land, Bureau of Land Management land, they have to prepare environmental assessments. And so we always work with them in hiring the consultants on a lot of occasions because they don't have the staff. They've had budget cuts. They don't have the staff to do it. So what I did in college, what I did afterward, really prepared me perfectly for being a location manager, especially working on federal and state lands in the West.
You know, I have to tell you, just wasn't that long ago, like when we knew we were going to do this story, I actually met someone who's very involved in the film industry, and this person was just adamant. Like, there was absolutely no way you could be environmentally conscious within the film industry, whether on studio or on location. She was just like, oh, you know, if the guys that are working, you know, on Grip and the Best Boys, if they don't have the ability to carry a bottle of water, you know, they're just going to, like, suffer from dehydration. And so they're just, you know, so we have to have bottled water. And it was a really interesting conversation because it was so entrenched in the idea that this is the way that we do it and we're not going to change.
You know, it's relatively easy here in Los Angeles County to convince people they should do certain things or not do certain things because most of us have to recycle. We do have to drink water. It gets really hot here when you're in the desert. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you have to have water. But instead of stacking up hundreds of cases of water on a set, you can set up 5-gallon jugs. A couple of productions, and I'm going to try to convince my production manager to do this, buys every crew member a water bottle that they can clip onto their belt. It's easy for grips, electricians, construction people, plasterers to. They've all got two belts on.
That's what I thought.
And
I was like,
walk over to the 5-gallon jug and fill it up 3 or 4 times a day. So, you know, that kind of attitude just gravels me because it's so short-sighted, so narrow-minded. The people that work in the film business are the most creative, talented, think out of the box kind of people. Right. So there's no reason it can't filter down to the set. There's no reason you can't call a food bank to come every day to pick up the food and use it for a good purpose as opposed to it going into the dumpster. There's no reason most vehicles can't be retrofitted at the cost of $100-$150 a vehicle to use biodiesel. It's available. There's no reason we can't use trash vendors, let's say, who separate the trash. There's a million ways to do things, and so I reject that attitude that we can't do things differently. I mean, the year is 2009. It's not 1929.
There might be some folks out there that's like, oh, boy, here comes Mike, the green police over here.
No, I'm not the green police. I'm really not. It's just, you know, when it's relatively easy to do certain things, you know, why not do it? You know, the studios have done a great job. A lot of the studios have very active programs, compact fluorescent bulbs, low flow toilets, all kinds of things they're doing in a very public way. It's relatively easy to do those things because you're at the lot, you're in your office. It's harder to translate those things when you're filming on location, whether it be in Los Angeles, New Mexico, New York, Connecticut, the jungles, doesn't matter where.
What was it like working on Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull with Spielberg?
It was fantastic. I had a chance to work with, first of all, some of the most incredibly talented people in the entertainment business. I got to travel to fantastic locations in Central America, South America, in the Southwest U.S. and New Mexico. We shot at Yale University. So, you know, from Iguazu Falls in Brazil to Yale University, the desert, the Ghost Ranch in New Mexico, fantastic place, the scenes that opened the movie. And we had to deal with a lot of issues. We were filming in jungle in Hawaii, where if you spill gasoline on the ground, it would be in the ocean within a couple of weeks because the volcanic rock is so porous. So, you know, we had to take special precautions working there. You know, working in the desert at Ghost Ranch, and we were filming in places that are rarely filmed. And so we had to have a real light footprint. And again, working with different departments, having the time to plan, to do things the correct way, we really lessened the impact that we would have had 10, 15 years ago making a movie in the same place.
Was there like a singular moment when you realized the film bug has just bitten me?
Oh, yeah.
I need to do this. Yeah.
I'll never forget. It was on Always.
Oh, yeah.
Audrey Hepburn.
Wow.
It was the last movie she worked on. And it was fantastic to meet her. It centered around forest firefighting. The airport near my house was the site of probably a couple weeks of filming. And I knew that they were going to film some night scenes. I could just see this incredible sort of silvery glow and all this smoke coming up. And I pulled in and I came around the corner and I could see these two beautiful old converted World War II bombers that were outfitted to fight forest fires, and these huge carbon arc lights. It was just the most incredible thing, with cranes and lights and cameras and this army of ants, you know, 150, 200 people, everybody moving in sort of a concerted way. Everybody apparently knew what they were doing. It was fantastic. I'll never forget that. I can close my eyes and I can see those two bombers just, you know, shining in the black. It was just beautiful.
My eyes are still closed and I'm enjoying that memory right now. I was like, wow, that is so beautiful.
And I have 1,000 of those little clips in my mind, you know, from the mountains in Washington to Tikal in Guatemala. There's 1,000 little snapshots that you come away with in this business.
Mm. So do you see yourself as a leader in this work?
I guess I want to be known as somebody that approached problems with an attitude that there's always a solution. There's always a way to accomplish an objective. It might not meet all of your criteria, all of your needs, but there's always a way to reach consensus with people. I try to do things so that I don't leave a mess behind me for somebody else to clean up. I hope I've a legacy of trying to do things the right way, trying to look at new ways to do things, maybe contrarian ways to do things that can work for everybody and just leave a little bit less of a footprint behind.
Amen. That was beautiful. Actually, I know you're working on a really cool project right now. Actually, one of my favorite comic book characters from ages ago.
Great.
The Green Hornet.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So tell me about it, please.
It's set in contemporary Los Angeles. It stars Seth Rogen, directed by Michelle Gondry, fantastic director. We're going to film all in Los Angeles. I can't really tell you much about the project, but it's the Green Hornet, it's Kato, it's the Black Beauty, it's a lot of action, it's a funny script, there's a lot of great elements to it. It's going to be filmed in Los Angeles this fall, coming to a theater in the summer of 2010.
Cool. Any hope that Sony's going to make the Green Hornet an environmental superhero?
I don't know that he's an environmental superhero, but there'll be a lot of environmental superheroes behind the scenes trying to do things the right way.
I have no doubt about that at all. Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you.
And it was mine.
Take good care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Mike Fantasia, Hollywood location manager and green superhero himself. Did you know The Green Hornet, long before it was a comic book series, was a radio drama way back in the 1930s? Take a listen.
The Green Hornet. With his faithful valet Kato, Britt Reeve, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet.